Welcome to the Northern Nerd Podcast. We're glad you could join us today. The Northern Nerd is the Northwoods entertainment, media, and creative hub. Each show includes different guests that come from all walks of life with stories to share. Enjoy our latest episode. Do you ever think about how much a meal can bring people together? Or how much a table means to storytelling? Meals are a storytelling platform we aren't always aware of. On this week's episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast, I got a chance to sit down with the Ranch Supper Club owner, Nathan, to discuss how he got his start in the restaurant industry, what makes the ranch unique, and I also got to know a little bit about the nerdiest things that he owns. Enjoy our latest episode. Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of the Northern Nerd Podcast. That's right, we're on our Abe Lincoln episode. It's going to be pretty awesome. So today I'm sitting down with Nathan of the Ranch Supper Club in Hayward, Wisconsin. And Nathan has appeared on local television, newspapers, blogs, podcasts, and even on the Food Network. So we're kind of just sitting down here at the ranch and we're just going to talk about whatever kind of comes up. But the ranch will be Nathan's going to be celebrating 2 years of owning the ranch here this fall. And a question that I have for you, Nathan, is what have you enjoyed the most about owning a supper club here in the Northwoods?
Well, it's definitely restaurant ownership. It's like raising a child. So I just really like it. It's a constant evolution as you go along. But I mean, like every day, like, you know, there's like little creeks or a leak here or this or that or the other thing. So it's just a constant evolution and like of hard work to keep it going. And then, really just we do it for, you know, two people. We do it for the employees and we do it for the guests. And I mean that, like, so to like see, almost like just kind of developing employees, but then also just making people happy that walk through the doors. It's really rewarding and for the hard work and all the toils that go along with it.
Yeah. What are some of the toils or the most challenging things, I guess, about owning a restaurant?
Well, I think everything that you complain about owning a restaurant, like the long hours and the heat of the kitchen and the stress, I think after all those things that you complain about sitting with friends over a beer or two at the bar, all of a sudden those are the exact same things that you feel good about, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's kind of that, like, it's a double-edged sword. Like I say, it's a lot of hard work, but it's also like very rewarding. And I just, it's just really different every day. You know, it really is. It's just really different every day.
Yeah. So there's like the routine stuff that, you know, is going to happen every day, but there's also some of that wild card stuff. It's like, okay, here we go kind of thing.
Yeah. And in a crazy dynamic, like I say, I mean, you could have any number of things. I mean, it's really like a long list that I'd rather not go into, you know what I mean? But right. You do have to, Boy Scout style, always be prepared. I mean, there's always like, not always, never say never, never say always, but there's, you know, a contingency plan for just about everything that happens because something will happen.
Yeah. And one of the things that you talked about last time we were here was you like the symphony or the orchestra of the kitchen, that there's like, there's something beautiful about like that kind of organized chaos to it all.
Yeah, well, no, it's like I refer to it as, the symphony or like even as a dance. I mean, it's like, you know, there's tight quarters and there's people, like once you get to, you're working with your team members that you're doing movements and like subtle just like, you know, dance that just really like without even spoken word, it's just like, you know, you're behind somebody and then all of a sudden you got a hot pot of water here, and then I mean it just the way it works together, like smooth, without you're using a further communication beyond words. I mean a lot of times, and that can sometimes mean a grunt or a curse word too,
right?
Like it's certainly like, but I mean it really is an amazing, like, to get when you're in the heat or in the heat of the moment, it's just really a neat thing.
Yeah.
The flow state, I think, is what, you know, I've heard it referred to as,
right?
You know, for smarter people than myself would say.
Yeah, it's just that time where everybody's kind of got to be like on their groove, and then just, yeah, that's something pretty cool. And like you could I'm just imagining right now, like somebody just like taking video of that and then overplaying it with some like soft, like music or something like that, or an overture or something like.
Yeah. Or I mean, in some cases, heavy metal, depending right. on if it's a Musky Fest weekend or not.
Yeah. That's awesome. The listeners are probably wondering how you kind of got into the cooking industry, or how you became a chef. And you kind of mentioned before that it was like a slow romance, and could you talk about that?
Definitely.
A little bit?
I mean, so I think like anything that you get into in life, I mean, that's worthwhile is a kind of a slow romance. I mean, you know, like just to make like a, you know, wake up one morning and be like, I'm gonna be a chef. I mean, that's amazing. And some people do have that. I'm not that, you know, like smart, I guess. Like I've always kind of like slowly dip my toe in before I jump in type of thing. But yeah, so it started off with my parents owned restaurant in Park Falls, which is just about an hour away from Hayward. And it was just a Greasy Spoon restaurant, you know, just kind of a family restaurant. We had a menu that was, you know, thicker than a phone book. I mean, this thing was just, I mean, it had, you know, 40 pages on it. And the good thing was, is if you ordered roast beef, it was like, we cooked roast beef from scratch, or mashed potatoes, or whatever the case was, including bread or any of these items, desserts, everything was made from scratch. So I grew up in that environment, which is an insane amount of work, but that also just gave me like a base level, so much deeper than any kind of culinary school could ever deliver. So by the time that, you know, I left there and moved to Madison after that, so a larger city where I'm working with my peers, I already had such a deep knowledge of like almost like just, you know, automatic, like, oh, bread. Yeah, I can make a bread. Or what do you want to do? Like roast beef? Yep. Don't need a recipe. Let's go, you know, or soup, dozens of soups, you know?
Right.
I mean, this is all by the age of like, you know, 16 years old. I was already kind of like managing and running a kitchen. So, and then as my career moved on, you know, I was kind of just, you know, always like cooking, but, always just pushing myself a little bit further and a little bit further. And, you know, I mean, would be, one day I was working next to a gentleman, and, he was probably, I would say, in his 50s, maybe mid 50s. And, you know, I look over at him, great guy, love him to this day. But I was just like, you know, we're doing the same exact thing. And I'm like, wow, like that makes me a little bit nervous, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, my back's already sore and I'm, you know, in my 20s. So I have to like, so I kind of decided, you know, around that time period that I'm going to, you know, take this seriously and like see how far it can excel. So I decided, you know, I was going to be an executive chef and like run restaurants and maybe potentially even one day own my own.
Yeah. That's very unique how it all like comes together like that. And I'm sure working at your family restaurant instilled that work ethic early on, like, hey, all right, this is what it's going to be like. And this is what I have to do in order if I want to succeed with this kind of thing.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they're like I say, I mentioned my peers, but so there was a time I was in San Diego, and we're working in this high-end kitchen together, and all these people like all went to culinary school and were in like just, you know, nagging debt. And I was the only one that just like, I had, you know, I learned it from the bottom up.
Yeah.
And we all were making the same, you know, $8 an hour, but I didn't have the debt, you know, so it was really helpful. And I don't speak anything against culinary school. It also gives you those skill sets. And of course, not everybody's parents have a restaurant that they were lucky enough to be enslaved in, as I would, as I would tell my parents, in order to gain that skill set. And that, I mean, it all comes down to ownership mentality, whether you're like, you know, washing a car or, you know, playing a fiddle, whatever you're doing, just to like have that kind of like one step further. It doesn't take that much more work to have that, you know, ownership mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody kind of has a different story of how they got to be where they are. Like, so yeah, somebody might've gone to culinary school, but then you have a different way of getting to that same spot.
Definitely. Right? Definitely. Right. Yeah. No, the journey, I mean, that's just my journey. There's many ways to get there, and probably some smarter ways too.
Well, that's just, I think one of the most interesting things is like, you can take food and it has a story with with each person that it goes through is like, all right, we're sitting down here at this restaurant eating this kind of meal, but how do we get here kind of thing? And I think that's one of the most, that's the cool thing about food is it brings people together in that sense.
Beyond that, I mean, that's an only one example. I mean, there's like with food, I mean, you're talking whether you procure your ingredients. So that could mean like hunting or fishing or even gardening. But then, I mean, like just every ingredient has a story behind it, a history behind it. You know, I mean, like you're when you if you dig deep enough into an ingredient, I mean, you could pull a leek out of the garden. And if you start like studying the history of a leek, I mean, you know, you're looking at a lot of like just a history, culture, geography. I mean, you could even go down the science realm of it. Or yeah. I mean, it's just it never ends like that. And that's what I really like about, you know, the food industry in general. You don't need to be, you know, cooking or bartending or, you know, waiting on tables or anything. I mean, there's a lot of like knowledge and a lot of opportunity just within food that, you know, hasn't even been thought of yet. And that's the neat thing about it. It's an endless, endless supply of information.
Yeah. Yeah. You could really go anywhere with it and down any route you want to, even like a certain smell. Like if somebody smells something as they're walking down the street and they smell something from a restaurant, like, oh, that brings me back to my grandparents' house or something like that. And then they go on a story about their grandparents or something like that. Like it, I just think it's really cool how it brings, you can tell so many different stories just within the food realm and then outside of that as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like, you know, summer festivals in Wisconsin. I mean, if I smell bratwurst and like onions from a distance or even like barbecue smoke, I'm turning, I mean, like my, you know, fat man radar is on. I'm like looking around.
Where are
like,
you at?
Exactly. Like we're going to be doing a U-turn if we pass something. You know?
Yeah. So have you, so kind of going back to your time going down to Madison, you said that you worked down in Madison. That's kind of how you got your start opposite of your parents' restaurant there. What was that experience like?
Well, it was pretty, very eye-opening and very amazing. So like I said, my first job in Madison, Wisconsin was from this small little empire called Ovens of Brittany. It no longer exists, but back in the 80s and early 90s, and well, it was the late 90s when I was there, but there was several Ovens of Brittany's locations around Madison area. And the good thing and the amazing thing about Ovens of Brittany is it was a bakery. It was wedding cake decoration. It was a breakfast, lunch, dinner restaurant. It was, I mean, endless supply of all these different like revenue centers coming out of this one building. So I was, you know, just had started as a line cook there, but just the amount of information you could absorb was really amazing. The good thing about my past when I was, you know, like I mentioned working at my parents' restaurant is I already had like such a good fundamentals that it was really easy to, you know, if you can already, like if you grow up in a family that, you know, speaks a foreign language, French, for instance, you kind of already a little easier to pick up on French and learn French. So it's that same kind of thing. So I was just a sponge at that point. And I worked there for a little while. And like I say, it was an empire that was on its way out. So it kind of was starting to end. And this gentleman by the name of Jim Delaney, he was on the west side of Madison, and he had a steakhouse. And he gave me my real first job where he actually like kind of saw something in me and gave me that, you know, some real responsibility and some trust, frankly, for his business. And that's where it really picked up. That's when I decided that, you know, like I really want to do this and I want to take it serious.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like his Luke Skywalker and like Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of.
Yeah, no, definitely.
There.
No, yeah. he's like I say, my first mentor. And I honestly, owning this restaurant today, I owe a lot of it to Jim Delaney.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And you even showed a picture of like the dish that you got featured in the Wisconsin Supper Club's book there. And
right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Gave you that creativity.
Definitely.
To go ahead and do that.
And people support what they help create. So like by, you know, and he saw that and he first kind of instilled that in me. I didn't know it at the time, but again, it comes back to that ownership mentality. And when you create something or you work with your staff on creating something, once it's created, they support it. You know what I mean? Like, and why not? Like, if it's something, you know, like that you do or you came up with, of course you're going to like have some buy-in with it.
Right. What do you think makes the Ranch Supper Club unique or special? Why do you feel that everyone should experience the Ranch Supper Club at some point in their lives?
Well, I think the ranch, what they do well is that we're steeped in old-timey tradition, okay? That supper club, Wisconsin supper club genre is unique unto itself. But beyond that is, you know, like this has been in the family for many, many years and passed down so that consistency exists. So you're not, you can't just like move from, you know, like be a chef in Philadelphia, move up to Hayward and like open up a supper club and hope for the best.
You right, know, cross just, the fingers. And
right. It's just not like how it's going to happen. There's a lot of these things. It's almost, you know, like a tribal hand down of information. And again, when it comes down to like I mentioned, you know, raising a child, it has that same thing. You know, these skill sets are kind of passed down from the previous people. And it's just, you know, so we have that traditional like supper club feel that we still maintain to this day in 2019. But then there's also just a little bit of, you know, modern sophistication involved with it as well. You know, so we do a lot of local ingredients. We take classics and just kind of reinterpret them. So, I mean, you know, this last weekend we did a pineapple upside down cake. Well, yeah, I mean, that's in Betty Crocker's from the 1950s or before for all I know, but you know, we kind of put a modern presentation onto it. So, I mean, it's just this things like that. We really respect tradition, and that's what, you know, a lot of supper clubs in Wisconsin that are still, you know, operating, they do respect that tradition. And I think, you know, the ranch is no different, just maybe slightly a little bit better.
Yeah. And just sitting right here now in the dining room as we're recording this, like the look and feel is something that's you're not going to get like kind of anywhere else. Like you're immersed into the culture right away. When you walk in, you're distant from, say, like the cookie cutter kind of places, but it's like you can definitely see the traditional values, and just even with the things that are hanging on the walls, it's
definitely
it separates itself.
Absolutely. No, like I say, and that, I mean, some of these things on the walls have literally been hanging on the wall since before I was born.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and like, that's great. And each one of these items does tell a story. And the previous owner, Beth and Barney Morgan, Barney's father did a lot of this photography here that you see. And I mean, that in itself is worth the price of admission just to kind of, you know, I mean, it's all from like this area photography, and it's really well done and amazing. And again, it tells a story.
Yeah, it's like a mini museum within the dining experience.
People, exactly. You mentioned it perfectly. Like, it's experience. You know, people want an experience. I mean, if I wanted just a cheeseburger, I could probably go to the local gas station and, you know, figure out the microwave setup and get right. one done. But like, you know, when you have a story, you know, we're here to tell a story. And that's like what we respect and what we do really well is tell the story of a supper club, including all those working parts that, you know, are included in making that story.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely a place that I think is, there's a reason why it's been here so long. And there's a reason why people continue to come here. It's because of those stories and that experiences that you guys have. So hats off to you for that.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of hard work. And again, I'm just on the shoulders of people that, you know, worked much harder than myself to get to accomplish that.
When I think, and there was something that you mentioned last time when we were talking to you, it was you're working it. You're not monitoring it from afar. You're not on some beach somewhere like texting updates like, yeah, do this kind of thing. Like, but you're actually here and you're immersed in it. And that's, I think that's something that's pretty cool too.
No, there's no substitution for that. To be, you know, an owner that's intimately involved in the operations, it's a must. And I mean, I think, everywhere, but specifically in this area, like people want to see that, you know what I mean? You want to walk in and you want to see the owner working it, you know, I mean, that way, you know what you're getting and you know that again, that ownership mentality, you're going to get that little special touches that you just won't get if you're, mm-hmm. you know, downtown Atlanta with, you know, a early young staff that doesn't know what the history of the restaurant is or even care, you know what I mean? So, I mean, ownership, right. you know, that mentality goes a long ways.
Yeah. And I think that's something about small towns too, is like you go in, like you see the shop owner, like, hey, welcome to my store, welcome to my restaurant, welcome
Absolutely.
To my business kind of thing. And yeah, I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's an unsaid, like, I mean, it's a little bit of that magic, you know, it's that social lubrication that just, I mean, it fits and you don't necessarily know why, but like, that's it. That's part of it.
If you like the Northern Nerd podcast and other things created by the Northern Nerd, please consider supporting us by going to our online store at www.thenorthernnerd.com/online store. And there you're going to find our hats, our coffee mugs, our t-shirts, and not just stuff with our logos on, but other things with the Northwoods in mind. If you go there right now and you go to checkout and you type in promo code podcast as you're checking out, you're going to get 10% off your next order. Please consider supporting the Northern Nerd, and thank you for being a nerd. Right now, I just want to do some, like, not rapid fire, but just some off the cuff kind of questions that I had written down for you. So it's not necessarily all going to pertain to the restaurant industry or anything like that.
Sure.
But are you down for that?
Absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So the first question I have for you is, what's your favorite thing that you own?
The favorite thing that I own? Well, I really collect two things. I collect black V-neck t-shirts for some odd reason.
Hey, everybody's gonna have their thing,
and books, you know, my book collection. I think that's something that I own. I'm not big on, I mean, I have a bunch of, you know, junk, and I have a bunch of toys and things like that, but my books are probably one of my, you know, prized possession, other than, you know, of course, family, which you don't own, but
right.
like is a part of me. But as far as material things go, I have, you know, an insane collection of cookbooks and reference books and just books in general. And I think this keeps giving, and I like it, and it adapts, and I pick things up and I read them, and I think books are like very important to me. So like I say, I got a bunch of stuff that could, you know, junk that could rust and go away. But like my books, I intend on, you know,
keep those
taking
close to
with
you.
Me. Yes.
Yeah. What's the last book that you read?
I do kind of the last book that I read was probably, I'm trying to think here. I had, like I say, I got stacks of them laying all over the place. There's this, a gentleman, Lin Yu Tang, which is an, Eastern philosopher. He's Chinese, but he spent quite a bit of time in the West. So his translations and his mental attitude has a Western, you know, like lean to. So that's kind of a really neat thing that I go to a lot. But I also just kind of binge on things. So like, whale hunting. I'll go to the library. I'll get 5 whale hunting, you know, books and a documentary or something.
Just go hard on that.
Right. I'm whale hunting, you know, for this next, you know, week or whatever. So
yeah.
That kind of thing. But I don't read fiction. I mean, it's all reference, or it's all just, like I say, I mean, but there is not there's books everywhere, including my car, front seat of my car, to all over every, you know, flat surface in my house. I mean, it's books
yeah.
are a way of, you know, a way of living for me.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So the black V-neck shirts and books, I like it.
Yeah, it's bizarre, I understand.
No, it's
okay. The two highest stacks in my house are those two items
yeah.
for some odd reason.
So the next question I have for you is, if you had to live in another time period, what would you choose?
I would love to live in 2018. Just last year. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I kind of like the romance. You know, there's always going to be like a, you know, like the good old days. And the truth of the matter is, we're living in the good old days right now. But I would kind of like, even like I say, even 30, 40, 50 years ago, just in the Hayward area specifically, like if I was sitting in this, you know, like this exact seat and I had to go to a different time.
Yeah.
I would like to just kind of see that bustling, you know, like town, and just kind of how it was developing. And at the library in Hayward, there's an entire section on the history, you know, like a history, a local history section.
Yeah.
And some of these guys and gals that just like help develop the area are just, I mean, you know, tougher than I'd ever consider even trying to be. And really an amazing thing just to kind of be a fly on the wall as far as that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to see how the town like progressed and like where it kind of started. And there's a old picture that my mom has in our basement. It's like when the town was first starting, it was like a picture of like Main Street. And then you can see kind of where Railroad Street was. And it's just all dirt roads and like horse and carriages and kind of thing like that. But just to be able to like kind of see like, all right, what decisions were made here and why was this thing kind of constructed the way it was? And now to be able to see where it's at now is.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an amazing, but again, like anything in the past is amazing to me. I mean, you know, like, so, I mean, even like some of these ancient societies that they're unearthing, you know, that are like, I mean, they're looking at, used to be like 10,000 years was the human history. Now it's 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. They keep just backing it up as like all these, you know, these, ancient runes are being like unearthed. It'd be pretty amazing just to, like I say, to be a fly on the wall for that for a second or two. But like I say, I kind of like the, you know, like when my grandpa was a boy, that's kind of where the romance is for me.
Yeah. No, that's really awesome. When have you felt the most proud?
The most proud I would have to say is the, you know, the birth of my children. Like, I mean, it's just talk about a roller coaster, terrifying ride.
Yeah.
With the, you know, the whole process. But when I see, I mean, you know, this was just Father's Day and my two children like gave me, they made these like homemade cards, you know, Father's Day cards, and like that, you know, really gets to you and swells some pride when they like these things that you made and created are now like giving back to you in like, you know, in the form of this card. Of course they give back to me every second I'm with them, you know, but I'm, that's the most memorable within a day or two where I was like, wow, I'm really, really proud of that.
You know,
like that does it for me.
Yeah. Those kind of moments that tug at the heartstrings there and you're just like, all right, this is, yeah,
definitely.
How often do you people watch?
Constantly. It's something I think that, that you do get from, you know, like I say, I read quite a bit, but so like that observation, I think there's people just talk too damn much, you know, like in when they should be just listening, you know, I mean, there's the old adage, you got two ears and two eyes and one mouth. You should be, you know, like listening and looking way, you know, double what you are talking. And I think that's a pretty smart, you know, term or smart phrase, because observation, that's where you're going to learn. And I like to learn. I'm curious. And that's where you have to always, like, I think you have to observe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that probably attributed to your cooking success too, is like when you said you were being a sponge and just kind of soaking all that in, you had to be very observant of the things happening around you.
No doubt about it. But you also have to be observant to cross the parking lot in Walmart or you'll get run over. So
especially this time of year.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's the epicenter of, you know, hazard control. You have definitely be on top of it.
Yeah, it's amazing the dynamic shift. Like during the winter, it's a little bit slower around here. And then you have Berkey, obviously, that'll spike that up a little bit. But I forgot how busy it actually gets here in the summer.
It's insane. And actually, when I first moved to town, you know, I was living in San Diego, so a little bit more traffic there, but not really when you know, relatively speaking, but, it was actually a post that I saw on your Instagram about like Railroad Street, no left turns. And I'm just like, oh, face palm to the head. I'm like, damn it. I've been doing, no wonder I'm one of those dummies, you know, like, cause it was impossible. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And, now after a couple years in it, it's just like, forget Railroad Street. There's just no left turn in Hayward.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about any left turn in Hayward.
Oh,
you need to like take, you know, three rights, make a left. That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, you have to use the lights, otherwise you're not getting anywhere, or unless it's a right turn. Yeah,
for sure.
No left turns.
And I actually, last year I got smart and I bought a little scooter. So if you ever see a blaze orange scooter riding around town, I'm the only one that's got, you know, that's me.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps me, you know, cut a little few corners here and there and like eliminate some of the traffic. But yeah, it's great. I mean, it's the lifeblood, obviously. So we're very happy to have it. But you have to, you know, approach it smartly if you want to get around town.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the local tips and tricks now. It's
for sure. It's good. It's much easier.
Yeah. So speaking of which, the traveling and things like that, what would be your dream car?
My dream car? Well, so I like machinery like the next guy, you know, as much as the next guy. But what I'm really looking at, and I mean, they have all these, you know, beautiful modern touches, and I'm sure I wouldn't turn down any kind of anything. But what I really want is like just a pickup truck, like an old pickup truck still in its work clothes, you know, a little rusty tailgate and just a, you know, kind of beater, maybe even like a, it doesn't need to be from the 40s by any means. I'd like to get past the drum brakes so I don't have to, you know, skid around and hit it, you know, trees on every corner.
Yeah.
But just like a good old work truck. And I'm not saying I'd want to rely on that for the rest of my life for travel purposes, but I really like that, you know, just like kind of just as a, like a kick the tires and beat around the woods type of truck. You know?
Yeah. Something with a little grit to it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say, still got to have the work clothes on it. I don't want anything all reef, you know, where I'm afraid to go park in a parking lot because it's going to get dinged up by somebody's door. I want something, you know, that you can kind of kick around a little bit.
Yeah. I like that. I feel like I'd kind of fall into the same answer, just like having a nice truck, well, especially around here too. You need a truck, I think. And
definitely. And I mean, you know, there's like a, you know, like there's a, my time in California, there's some Teslas and there's some amazing like things out there. And I wouldn't turn down any of those things, but there was one case where I was, at a restaurant I was working in at the time, there was a valet, and this guy pulls up with this, you know, $500,000 or more Italian sports car.
Oh my God.
And I mean, this thing is like an inch and a half off the ground. I mean, you can't even see it if you were like at a stoplight next to it. You just overlook it looking out your window. And I'm just thinking like, I mean, this, if you had a nickel on the street, it would scrape it, you know? So it's just like some funny things like what people spend, you know, money on for some of these machines is really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. If you hit a squirrel up here with that, it'd be totaled.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, you have to put a brush guard on your Ford Escort in this area, right. You know, and like chains on your tires or something.
Yeah. All right. So what's something that you hope never changes?
Something I hope never changes. I mean, that is in, you know, obviously the impossible.
Yeah.
Because the only constant is change. But like I say, I mean, I go back to my kids and like, it's just like so precious right now. And like, you just have to take time to enjoy the now. So, I mean, that's the only thing that's not going to change. So you need to appreciate this second right now, because everything else changes. But if you kind of like, and I'm practicing this, I'm not the best at it, but like living in the now and appreciating the exact moment you're in, that's will never change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something that we kind of, as people get caught into a trap of like, oh, this thing's happening next week, or this thing's happening, this is going to happen 5 years from now. And we just get caught in like the tomorrows, but not in the todays.
Oh, and I'm 100% guilty of it.
I think we all are to a certain extent.
I try, like I say, I'm aware of it. So I'm working on it. It's one of the, you know, 57 things that I need to work on with
myself. It's on the list on the fridge or something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I have two more questions for you. First one is, what songs have you completely memorized? If there was like a particular era, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's actually funny. So yesterday we were on a kind of a little family road trip, and we went to Delta Diner. I don't know if you've ever been there.
Okay, I was actually planning on going there today.
Really a great place. I have to admit, one of our regulars turned us on to it, and we went there yesterday, and it was amazing. Anyway, a lot of like road time. We went up to Copper Falls. We did this whole thing. So a lot of music, and I realized that I could, you know, Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd. Like, yeah. I sang that word for word and realized, like, wow, that's scary. Like, I think I could actually, I might be able to perform that one.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's your karaoke song.
Exactly.
To go to.
Exactly. Well, I didn't think it was, but I kind of just was like, wow, that was a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Know? But you know, and also there's probably not too many Willie Nelson songs that get by me that I can't sing word for word.
Yeah. All right. Final question is, we always ask this on the podcast, but what is the nerdiest thing you own? So you meant besides your books,
sure,
and besides the shirts, what would you say would be the nerdiest thing that you own?
Well, stereotypical nerdiest thing that I own it's actually, you caught me on a day that I'm not wearing it, but I have a 1980s calculator watch, believe it or not.
Wow.
That is like my everyday carry.
Yeah.
And I also, no joke, I mean, you know, is pocket protectors. I really am into these like pocket protectors. I got a little like pen flashlight, and you know, I keep my pens and whatnot in there. So strange, but obviously not reflected on it before, but that's certainly the Revenge of the Nerds, most like, you know, the nerdiest stereotypical things I own. But I do like, you know, what I think nerds is not a derogatory term by any means. I think it's just like, you kind of like focus in, you know, on certain things. Like you, I collect, you know, LPs, which I think is, you know, could be considered kind of a nerdy thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a niche thing.
Exactly right. But like I say, you know, I mean, it definitely comes down to the books and the just, you know, trying to absorb as much information on certain topics is kind of, you know, I have a nerdy approach that I wear every day more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I think that's one of the most interesting answers that we've had. Like, a lot of people say, oh, my movie collection or something like that.
Sure, but which I have as well. I mean, I have collections of all sorts of, like I say, junk.
No, but like, yeah, it's a really unique answer. That's awesome.
Well, right on.
Well, any last thing you want to share in the show?
No, man. I just want to say, you know, get out there, come to the ranch, check us out. But just in general, in the Hayward area, the Northwoods, I mean, it's treasure upon treasure upon treasure. I was just, like I say, I traveled probably a 4-hour, you know, square around this part of the state yesterday. And you get up there by like Delta Diner, and it almost was like, looked like the southern part of the state. There was like, it was all farmland and hilly. It wasn't a lot of forest, but then of course, you know, 30 miles or 30 minute drive down the street, and then you're back into like, you know, lowlands, and then you're into like, you know, tall pine. I mean, it's just really like, this is the time of year to do it, and it really is just like an amazing part of the country. So
yeah,
just get out there and explore, and hell, put us on the list.
Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.